Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. Today I have with me Amy Jean, and she is a PA who's actually going to talk to us about something that is still very much about emergency medicine. But for PA month, we're not just having emergency medicine PAs. We're going to have some PAs and other specialties too come and talk to us. And this one is extremely important to have when we're talking about emergency medicine and how to take care of patients acutely. And this is something that I don't feel like has really been talked about in the literature. And it's all about total joint arthroplasty or total joint replacements. And before we go too far into that, Amy, could you introduce yourself here?
Yes. Hi, my name is Amy. Like Chip said, I'm a physician assistant practicing in the state of Tennessee in an orthopedic practice that focuses primarily on primary and revision joint replacements.
Like I said, we're here about total joints. So we're actually taking this not as far as necessarily maybe everything you have to do with it, but how do you triage that patient? What are the things we're supposed to do? What are the things we're not supposed to do? When do we talk to just an orthopedic surgeon in general? When do we need to talk to that particular specialist? Let's get into those types of details.
Yeah. So I kind of divide up the triage of joint replacements into, I guess, three categories: the acute, post-op, subacute, and then the remote arthroplasty. And really depends on kind of what they're presenting for. I classify the acute phase in the first 6 weeks after a joint replacement, whether that be — our office primarily deals with hips, knees, and shoulders, right? The big joints. First 6 weeks, we kind of own the patient, if you will, if I can use that term. We want to know everything that happens with that patient. The first 6 weeks after a surgery is kind of the crunch time, especially for rehab and patient gets really sick. Does it set them back in their recovery? Things like that. Which all you can see in the emergency department. So, and then you've got your subacute phase, kind of that 6 weeks to 3 months, or even I guess you could push it out to 6 months, and then the remote joint arthroplasty, which is really beyond that 3 to 6 month mark. It really depends on what, you know, in terms of the emergency medicine, what the patient is presenting for, but there's different things that you can see first, kind of immediate few weeks after surgery as compared to remotely.
Would it help if we went through a couple of different examples?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, we got a patient who comes in 2 days after their surgery. They had a total knee repair, and it's just painful. That's their complaint. It's a really painful knee.
First off, I would hope they wouldn't present to your emergency room at all. What I would hope they would do is they would call our office first, okay, and talk to either a triage nurse, PA, nurse practitioner, someone who can kind of tell them what to do, adjust their pain medicine, things like that. We keep our patients in the hospital for couple of nights after surgery. So very different than it was maybe 5 or 10 years ago when they stayed for a week. Patients are going home much sooner, starting therapy sooner, outpatient therapy. They're probably going to have some pain. It's not like when someone has like a heart surgery or something like that and they can do their incentive spirometers and deep breathing and their pain's better. That just doesn't really cut it with someone who's had their bone cut on and power tools used on them recently. So if it's just pain, you know, obviously I would start off with inspection of the joint, make sure there's nothing crazy going on. There's no abnormalities. There's no plain film abnormalities, no fractures surrounding the implant. If the knee looks good, not red, hot, swollen, then I would look more towards, is their pain control, their pain regimen, is it adequate? Because different people, you know, require different things in terms of, are they okay on 50 milligrams of tramadol every 6 hours, or are they requiring 4 milligrams of Dilaudid? It really depends on kind of what they're sent home from the hospital with and what they have at home. But that's probably what I would focus on first.
What about — this is something that comes up all the time, and I have to try and convince the patient that this is okay. The patient has, let's say, 4 or 5 days post-op, and they have a little bit of clear, maybe a little bit of bloody drainage from their wound, and they think it's infected because it's a little red at the edges.
Yeah, yeah. So redness around the incision, of course, is really normal. You know, we try to tell patients that. If I was in the emergency room and a patient came in with a tiny bit of erythema around their incision and tiny bit of like pinpoint spot of drainage on their bandage, you know, less than a week out, I'd say, you know what, this is really normal. Things we look for, of course, are fever, swelling out of proportion, and erythema that's surrounding the knee. You know, those are really normal findings. I don't really get worried unless that incision starts coming open or they're spiking a fever of like 103.
Should we start consulting, though? I mean, is this something that — because I work night shift.
Yeah.
Not everyone, of course, works night shift. But I think it's one thing that some people are thinking to themselves, do I need to call specialists? Even though it may not be something that's acute, it may be just a little bit of drainage. Do I need to call them to at least let them know that they were there?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of the more communication, the better. Okay. And I think that just makes us better clinicians, takes care of our patients better in the long run. I'm never going to mind, even if I'm taking night call, you know, I'm going to leave work at 5, but I'm going to go home and have my phone on me all night. So if a patient did present to the emergency room at 2 a.m. somewhere, you know, in East Tennessee, 3 hours away from where our hospital is, I would love to get a phone call from that PA that sees them and says, hey, this patient's here. Their incision looks like it's intact. They have a tiny bit of drainage on their bandage. Their pain regimen's pretty good, but the patient was really worried. Just wanted to let you guys know. And is there anything else I need to do? I think that's an okay phone call no matter what time of day it is. I'm thumbs up for it. If you feel like the patient's with it enough to send them home, then, you know, that'd be okay too.
Does it matter if I call that particular surgeon, or can I call the surgeon on a call for that group? Does that matter?
I would say on call for that group. Yeah, because anytime practice, we're fortunate enough to have a provider, whether that be a PA, nurse practitioner, or a doctor, on call 24/7. So that means they have their phone in their pocket. They might not be at the hospital, but they have their phone in their pocket and they can consult anybody like that. So, and I think we take call as a group, not as a particular surgeon. So I think it depends, but I think a phone call to that particular office, that practice, is never going to be a bad thing. And they should get that to the correct and appropriate person.
Now, here's another scenario that seems to come up. Let's say 2 or so weeks post-op, patient comes in, really painful, red, swollen knee, looks angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do I tap it?
Oh, that's a good question. Do you feel comfortable tapping it? That's my question to you.
Well, I may feel comfortable with it, but let's say this is someone who feels comfortable with tapping it. Are there certain times when we should or should not be tapping it?
Absolutely. So that's a great question. Most of our surgeons, if they're that acute post-op, and I'm sure it'll differ from practice to practice, our doctors are fellowship joint replacement trained. So this is what they do day in and day out. Our doctors would say, don't tap it unless the patient can't see us for like 4 or 5 days. They want to put their hands on it first. If it's killing them and you just think, okay, I think I can get a good fluid sample out of this, you put that phone call into the office, that may be something that say, yeah, get it. If you're going to tap it, this is what I want you to do. And if you decide this is appropriate, I'm going to draw some fluid off of this joint, you get a good sample. My only thing that I would say, if you're going to tap it, don't throw the fluid away. Use it. Send it to the lab for a cell count. Send it for a culture. Get some lab to take a look at it and say, what's the white count here? Cell count with diff, so fluid count with diff, and then a culture. Those two things are going to be lifesavers for your patient and the surgeon if you do draw fluid off of it.
Is a Gram stain beneficial to get in addition to those?
Sometimes. A lot of times what I'll do if I'm in the office and a patient comes in with said complaint, think it's maybe infected, and I do this almost on a daily basis. I'm going to draw the fluid off. I'm going to send it to our lab for a fluid count with diff. Most of the time, that's going to include a Gram stain. Ours, they're going to do that already. So I guess it depends on your hospital and how that's ordered. And then culture. If it's a native joint, I'd do maybe some crystals, but culture for sure and a cell count for sure. I think Gram stain's kind of secondary, honestly.
Now, here's another question for you. Patient that is not a clear admit to me. What are the guidelines or what are the recommendations out there as when this is a patient who not only do I need a consult, but maybe I should be pushing more for the admission or transfer if I'm at an outside facility?
If I get a phone call from outside facility, which just happens a lot, our patients kind of come from all over, 3-4 hours away. They'll go to more rural emergency departments or even their primary care and say, hey, this is what's going on, before they would drive 4 hours to see us. So we get consults on a regular basis. And I always ask, what are their vitals? Is their temp 102, 103? Are they tachy? What's their blood pressure? You know, are you looking at those things of, you know, are they sick to their stomach? Do they feel ill? Do they look sick? You know, that kind of your classic, they look sick. Those are the big things. If they have a fever and it's a really, you're looking at the knee and you're like, they have no other symptoms. They don't have a raging UTI. They don't have a terrible cough and their O2's getting into the 80s. You don't think they have pneumonia 2 weeks post-op. If you think this is their knee and this is the only thing that's bothering them, then absolutely. I think it's appropriate if they have a really high fever or they're tacky, if their vitals are not, if you're not loving what you're seeing in terms of stability of their vitals, then I think it's appropriate to admit, at least observe, you know, especially if it's overnight, and then transfer to their surgeon's hospital if that's an option. We always accept our patients if they're post-op. It's not even a question. I don't think you'd have any pushback. I would hope not anyway.
Amy, you mentioned real quick, you talked about the example of they just look sick. Now, I don't know what orthopedic equivalent is, or maybe you had some family medicine background, but we have what's called the LLS criteria. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's called looks like shit. And
I'm not familiar with that acronym in particular, but I think I'm going to use it from now on. So
yes, the LLS criteria. It looks like shit.
Yeah. So the patient comes in and they just look like there's something not right. You can tell, you know, and you look at their vitals and go, oh, their white count's 25 and their temp is 102 and they have chills. And especially if they're within that first 6 week post-op. And I know that's something you and I talked about, kind of the medical versus orthopedic. I know in the emergency department and primary care, you work up medical stuff all the time. Do a UA if they have UA complaints, or to do a chest x-ray and listen to them if they have cough. But there's nothing else that we see, and their knee is really hot and red and angry. And this is a departure from their normal, what their post-op course has been doing. That it's really important to put that in the differential.
I guess since you mentioned that here, let's talk about what are some of the common complaints that you're going to see in this acute phase, the less than 6 week period.
My thing is you have to discern medical versus ortho. Probably the most common medical complaints we see in the acute. And the reason why I differentiate that is not because ortho is different, you know, bones, and then the rest is medicine. But it's because there's a joke that we have in the office of just bones. That's all we're going to talk about. So I think it's because we do have a separate hospitalist team that helps us in the hospital. So that's why I'm speaking in terms of medical versus ortho. You know, we do manage their pain, but in the hospital, their blood pressure is dropping, or they have a run of VTAC and it's not, you know, they don't have a cardiac history. We consult the hospitalist, and I'm super thankful for that help and that extra arm to grab if we need something. But in terms of general medical stuff, you know, the most common things we see are things like UTIs, pneumonia, vomiting. That's probably the most common complaints: nausea, UTI, cough, pneumonia. And of course, you got your big players like DVTs or major cardiac problems, things like that. But those are the most common, just really kind of the first few weeks post-op.
What happens when that patient comes in with one of those complaints or one of those findings? For example, let's say that they came in and they had pneumonia afterwards. Do I still need to call you and let you know that they were there, even though that wasn't directly an issue with their replacement? Yes, it's a post-op complication, but do I need to call you about it still?
I would love it if you did. I understand that in the emergency room, you don't always have the time to do that. But even if you tell the patient, hey, you really need to call your surgeon, their office tomorrow, you know, when you get home, or, you know, even if you just send me a note from the emergency room, that's better than nothing. Because what we don't want to happen is when we see them at 6 weeks, for them to have this really crappy post-op period, and we have no idea that they've had it, because there's really no way for us to check up on every single post-op patient once a week. If it's within the first 6 weeks, yeah, I would love a phone call if somebody saw my patient, even if it's a, hey, they're having urinary retention after anesthesia, like a week out, if they saw their primary care. Yeah, I want to know that.
Okay. And that one makes sense to me. I've noticed I probably don't always call in the less than 6 week period if it is not directly related to the joint itself, but I will always tell them that they still need to talk to their orthopedic surgeon just to have things rechecked.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if it's, you know, like I said, if it's not a phone call, I know that's asking a lot. If I called on every single patient I saw, there's no way I could do anything else. Right. So that's just crazy.
There are some people who do that, but they don't get as many things done. I've noticed that.
No, I'm not doing that. So, but if I know a patient has a complicated history, or if they've just had surgery, you know, it's just a common courtesy of even just faxing over a discharge summary, or just leaving a message with the front desk. Hey, wanted to let you know they were in the emergency room overnight. Call with any questions. You know, we can even call the patient. That's normally what we do.
It sounds like your orthopedic group is great, but not all are created equal.
No, they aren't.
This is something I've run into before, not necessarily at my current shop, but this is something I've run into before where, let's say I have a patient who comes in, maybe possibly a surgical wound, maybe not. You know, I call them and I say, hey, this is what's going on. I tell them everything. I tell them the labs that I've got, everything like that. And they say, yeah, it could be an infection. Go ahead and put them on some antibiotics and have them follow up with me. And then it's like, click. That's all you got.
Ugh, that hurts my heart.
I know. How should I be treating this patient? Because they just said give me antibiotics. I mean, do I need to cover for staph, strep? Do I need to cover some other stuff? What antibiotics are preferred?
That's a great question. Because really, when it comes to a possibility of a joint infection, our doctor's preference is not to start them on antibiotics beforehand until you get a good aspiration of that joint.
And let's say we're not thinking, maybe this wasn't as obvious as a joint infection. Maybe this was just like a surgical incision infection. Yeah, something that we're not, this is not something that's clearly, hey, this is something that needs IV antibiotics or an obvious tap. This is like that one that's leaking a little bit of green drainage, but it doesn't really look that bad.
Yeah. Okay. So we see those a good bit. A lot of times I'll just make sure the incision is closed. Okay. That's the biggest thing. And then maybe put them on some Keflex. That's always my kind of go-to antibiotic.
Is that personal preference, or is that because you're not worried about MRSA in your setting? I'm just curious.
If I'm worried about MRSA, if the patient's had a previous staph infection, sometimes I'll do a Bactrim or something like that. But if I'm not particularly worried about that, we just don't see a whole lot of just straight MRSA post-op infections, unless it's like a rip-roaring knee prosthesis infection. Okay. So more of the surface stuff, Keflex will normally cover it.
I think that's all the main stuff we wanted to talk about with the acute phase.
I think I didn't put something in there that I wanted to maybe talk about is just dislocations or like an actual ortho fracture, something like that. But we can kind of talk about in the subacute. So anytime, of course, with a dislocation, if there's not a fracture, our doctors normally say, if you can relocate it, relocate it. If you can reduce it. I had a patient come in a few weeks ago who had a reverse shoulder replacement 3 or 4 months before, and she was doing good until a couple days before, was doing some therapy. My shoulder looks weird and it hurts, and she was dislocated. She came in and we were able to put it back in the office without any sedation. I think that was just kind of a one-off, hey, if you can do it, do it. Of course, there was no fractures or anything like that. That's the big thing. Of course, if there's any fracture on x-ray, we would recommend not reducing and calling their surgeon. But anytime it's dislocation, especially hip, if you can do it in the emergency room, just go ahead. That's the patient's going to be better for it.
Oh, really? So you actually like us to reduce the hip? That's so interesting because this is kind of more local practice I've noticed for the, and maybe it's just a Missouri thing because I worked at a couple of different shops and they were all, if it was not a prosthesis, for us to try and reduce it first. If it was a prosthesis, they said, these are so hard to put back in the department, just go ahead and call us and we'll come in and we'll surgically reduce it.
Yeah. And that, are they, well, and I guess I could ask, are they more general ortho?
Yes. Yes. They tend to be more general.
And I think our guys are just comfortable with the emergency rooms doing that because I don't know if they can just, they feel like they can handle it. Most of the time patient goes in, they can, give them a little bit of conscious sedation and pop it back in. We're happy with that. Of course, if there's any kind of fracture or especially fracture communication with the prosthesis, that's a bigger deal. So anything like that, we would absolutely want.
And to clarify, when we're talking about fracture, it's very, very rarely of the hardware. It's the bone around the hardware or adjacent to the hardware.
Exactly. There may be a one-off every now and then where the patient may be super morbidly obese and they're hip stem has broken or, something like that. But very rarely is it actually the hardware. It's more, most commonly we see, 85-year-old lady who maybe had to have a cemented stem because her bone quality is poor, fell going down the steps and she's fractured her femur around the stem of the hip implant. And that's so common, especially in elderly people who fall. Those cases, the patient's most likely looking at a revision hip replacement at that case, depending on what the fracture is. So that the surgeon would definitely need a consult at that point.
So more metal is the answer.
Yeah, sometimes. At least some nice little zip tie cables around the bone, if nothing else. So
now I've seen something look like that on one x-ray that long ago. Actually, I wish I had taken a picture of it because it was so cool. We joked that it looked like the grips to put the hip back in, like it kept dislocating all the time because actually she was here for a hip dislocation. And it looked like two zip ties off the bone.
Yeah.
There are these little metal
rings. So around the femur?
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are cerclage cables and they use those like if they're putting in a stem. And maybe they had to do a revision or something like that. And they had to pull the old stem out and they maybe got a fracture, calcar fracture or troch fracture, something like that during the surgery. They'll throw a couple of those around there and keep them non-weight bearing for a few weeks and it'll heal right up, kind of hold everything together. It's kind of crazy. We joke and say, to the patient, there's your little zip ties and, that keeps everything in place because we go over every visit. We go over the patient's x-rays with them. So it's fun to kind of look and see that the screws really look like drywall screws. And it's fun for the patient to kind of identify with that, though.
We've talked about the immediate and we talked about how that's less than 6 week period. And then we're talking about the remote that's the greater than 3 months. But what's that like in between of 6 week to 3 month range? Is that just a gray zone?
It is. And I think it's the zone where the patients, you see more people who are just coming in with complaints of pain, especially people who may have some overuse type pain. So a lot of troch bursitis, IT band, my hip didn't hurt at all before I went on vacation last week, things like that. Those are the things that people get really worried about because they were doing well. Okay. So they do great during their post-op, immediate post-op. And they're like, I love my hip and, my knee doesn't hurt near as bad as it did before surgery. And then they start getting back to normal life. Their weakness is still kind of there because they're not doing their exercises every day and things like that. So we get a lot of that why is my knee swollen? And did you go and walk around Disney World for 10 hours yesterday or go with your family on this long hiking trip or whatever? And people think that they're back to normal when really they have a long way to go in terms of swelling and things like that. Probably less kind of the acute stuff and more of the, I think you're going to be okay, worried patients.
This is basically the life is good and then now it sucks again because it was so good, I did everything the wrong way and now I'm back to it.
And you have to have the terrible conversation of you need to do your therapy and ice and take your anti-inflammatories.
That was going to be my question is then how do we treat this? Because they say, well, the Percocet worked great last time. Well, I'm not going to give you Percocet.
It's not an appropriate treatment. The Percocet's not. So we're 100% behind that. We like our patients to be on NSAIDs if they can take them for 3 to 6 months after surgery, just because that, I mean, it's big trauma that they had to their joint. It's huge. And whether they feel like it is or not, it is. And there's a lot of inflammatory mediators that are coming into that space even months after their surgery and really laying down that, kind of taking away the bad stuff and bringing the good stuff. So they have to realize that those NSAIDs do have a place even 3 to 6 months out after surgery. I think sometimes muscle relaxers have a benefit. You know, 5 milligrams of Flexeril may help them relax at night. And depending on what their complaint is, whether it's swelling or pain or whatever, we're big fans of Celebrex or Mobic and extra strength Tylenol. That's a lot of times what we'll... We don't prescribe narcotics after 90 days post-op, so we kind of have to draw a line somewhere. But our patients tend to do okay with that, especially if we get them on something NSAID-wise that's kind of a regular Mobic once a day for a month tends to do some good for someone who has some bursitis.
You mentioned obviously the pain side of things, but obviously after that 6 weeks, there can be other complications that show up. And we talked a little bit about the infection in the like basically hyperacute or acute phase of the management. Does the infection change if, say, this is talking about 6 or more weeks out?
Yeah, it can. Sometimes we'll see more of an insidious onset. We see people who have had their implant in for 2+, 3+ years who get infected. And people come to us and go, well, how did this happen? What did I do different? What did I do wrong? And we just have to give them the answer of we don't live in a bubble and bacteria is everywhere. And sometimes it happens. The patient may come in multiple times for pain that we can't really find a source for. And those are the frustrating ones that you can't really tell that it's infected. Or the patient, you know, and a real kicker for a patient, if they come in to your ER and been doing great, and then they come in and go, well, I woke up yesterday morning, my knee was red hot, and now I can't bend it past 90 degrees. That's a big red flag for infection. Those are the kind of things you'll see more of a subacute, things like that. Infection subacutely will present differently than it does acutely. Acutely, you'll see that wound dehiss and it'd be really red and hot. Subacute, you'll see more of a like, oh, my range of motion is not as good, things like that. But they'll still present with complaints. And it may be a 48-hour and they've gone from great to terrible. Or it may be more of a 6 week, this has been bothering me, slowly getting worse, you know, several weeks.
Outside of tapping that knee, are there any other labs that we could do? Or I say knee, but obviously this is for any joint. But outside of tapping that joint, is there anything else that we can do test-wise that could be beneficial?
Yeah, of course, in the emergency room, you know, I always tell patients, if you're waiting in the emergency room, that's a pretty good sign. Do what you feel is necessary to make sure that they're safe to go home, right? So if that means a white count, that's fine. And their white count's normal, that's fine. But in our office, we do a SED rate and a CRP. So a SED rate and CRP are nonspecific, but they do show up if something crazy is going on. And I think the thing for the marker is probably 3 to 6 months post-op. You don't want to do it any sooner.
Is that because it'll be artificially elevated anyway?
You know, I'm not going to do a SED rate and CRP on somebody who's 6 weeks out from a knee replacement. That's just shooting yourself in the foot. 6 months out? Yeah. And they come in with a really unusual presentation of, it's Sunday afternoon and I woke up Sunday morning and now I can't bend my knee and I was doing fine yesterday. Yeah. SED rate, CRP, white count, those are all appropriate. And of course, plain films. I think just an x-ray to look at it. If there's a huge area of lysis around that implant, that's bad news. At least you have a direction to go and to tell the patient, hey, you absolutely need to follow up with your orthopedist first thing next week. They're acutely ill, of course, like we talked about, different rabbit trail.
One more thing on that. Is there a cutoff of some kind? And I kind of already know the answer for this, but I feel like it has to be asked since we mentioned. Is there any sort of real cutoff on this is a high CRP or ESR, or is it basically
on a whim? Yeah, so each lab is going to have their particulars, right? But a SED rate of less than maybe 30, I think, is okay. SED rates into the 80s, 90s, That's, I don't like those numbers. A CRP, depending on your lab cutoff, I've seen cutoffs at like 2.5 and I've seen cutoffs at 0.8. Anything 4, 5, 6 and above, that's when I would kind of start to go, what's going on here?
So several times above the normal range, basically.
Yeah. If I get a sed rate and a CRP and the sed rate's 27 and the CRP is normal, I'm probably not going to tap the knee. I'm probably going to say that's probably normal for the patient. But if I get a sed rate and CRP and the sed rate's 80 and the CRP is 10, that's a problem.
You have a patient who is greater than 3 months out of their surgery. Now we're talking about stuff that's a little bit different. Is it even more different than that subacute phase as far as how the infection presents?
No. I would say once the wound is healed, it's kind of going to be that, like I said, the acute phase, that wound's probably going to dehiss and open up if they're infected. But if that wound is healed, everything's going to kind of stay contained. You may see either more of an insidious if it's something slow growing like staph epi. We see that sometimes in shoulders, and it may be, you know, a year before we figure out what's going on because it's not wanting to show itself even on an aspiration. But if it's something E. coli, you know, MRSA, then it may be a little bit quicker, but you probably wouldn't see the wound dehiss.
And let me ask you another question regarding that greater than 3 months out. What are some of the complaints that would be things that we need to then call you about?
I would say if it's something like bursitis, I hate to say please call, but I guess if the patient is seen in the emergency room.
If it's bad enough to bring them in, then it's bad enough that we should call you?
Well, you would hope, right? But some people come present for not emergent things, right?
Well, child checks. Never seen that before.
Sniffles times 2 days.
Fever for 10 minutes.
I felt hot. No. I think if it's something like bursitis or in their films are completely normal. If it's something silly, you don't have to call. But if it's something like, oh, I think I hurt my knee, you know, and I had it replaced 3 months ago, then yeah, I think it's appropriate. I think it's appropriate to call. You know, I stepped in a hole and I think I might have sprained my knee or loosened my implant. Well, an x-ray and an evaluation, then I think it's okay. I'm never going to balk at an emergency room call that says, hey, your patient's here. I just feel like that's rude.
I appreciate that. Sometimes we don't always get the same feedback, but I appreciate that.
Yeah.
What about for the patients who we're talking about, let's say it's years out, you know, someone comes in a couple of years later, and let's say they were in an MVC. It was like a right shoulder replacement, and they were wearing their seatbelt as a passenger, of course, going right over that right shoulder, and they've got pain to it. The x-rays look fine. Nothing's really jumping out, but they just say they can't move it. But again, the x-rays of the actual replacement look fine. Is there a time when we should consult you, or do we say maybe we should get the CT, even though the CT obviously is going to have some artifact with it? I guess what kind of stuff should we do to further evaluate that joint?
If you suspect a fracture, maybe. So I know from looking at shoulder x-rays on a day-to-day basis, they're kind of hard to read. I think they are, just because there's so much superimposed, and does the acromion really look okay, or is that something, and it depends on the quality of the x-ray, is everything looking good? If you suspect something like an acromion fracture, I think a CT is okay. If the patient is okay otherwise, you don't really have time to do the CT, and you don't think it's going to affect their immediate, you know, next 2 days after the car accident kind of thing, then I think it's appropriate to put them in a sling and say, ice your shoulder, take this medicine, and follow up with your orthopedist this week. And I think that's an appropriate thing to, you know, give a phone call or a discharge summary and say, x-rays looked okay, but it's this potential acromion fracture, follow up with orthopedist. I think that's okay. We see those actually a good bit after a shoulder replacement. And really, the treatment is a sling and give it time. Make sure that fracture is approximated. There's not a lot of surgical repairs for that.
Awesome. Well, you've covered so much great information. Even though this is going to be a little bit of a longer podcast, I think it's something that we have to cover in detail, because this is something that we don't see a lot. There's definitely not a lot of information out there for the emergency medicine side of things. But even with all this coverage, are there things that you still want to add to this that we haven't yet covered?
I think that just working in a specialty, I have to give appreciation to emergency medicine providers, because they really are the ones that are taking care of our patients when they're hurting the worst. So like you said, when you say, okay, do I need to call you guys about this? If there's ever a question, I think if it's a, and I hope you're dealing with orthopedists that appreciate you as well. I know not everybody does, but phone call is always okay. So if you ever have questions or concerns, I think it's always okay to call and kind of see what the surgeon would want you to do. I feel like that's always an okay thing to do.
I think that's a great way to end it. And I do have some great orthopedic surgeons that I get to consult and talk to, but obviously not everything's created the same. So that's why I still mention it. I very much appreciate having you on. I know it's kind of happy PA week, but at the same time, for me, it's happy PA month because we're going to have PAs all month.
Well, I appreciate you having PAs on all month. That's, I think that's awesome.
Thank you so much, Amy, for coming on. You've been an awesome guest, and I am so happy that we could have different people. Again, not just emergency medicine, but PAs in general, because this is not only PA week, this is PA month for me. Again, thank you. And will you give us the tagline, please?
Yes. Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.